Continuing our discussions concerning the forcibly displaced Armenians from Artsakh, I'm joined by another Australian, Peter Mitch from Yerevan, to talk about the situation with the refugees and the humanitarian assistance needed. Peter, welcome to SBS Armenian.
Barefajan Vokchun Bolari from Armenia.
Peter, since we last spoke last year, any exciting news in your life in Armenia? Are you still working at the Center for Innovation?
Yes, still working for the National Center for Innovation and Entrepreneurship. My main work is to do with assisting in inquiries from people who, from the diaspora and even from people outside of the Armenian community. To many of them, contact me, for example, to ask, is it possible to live in Armenia? What do we have to know? What are the pros and cons? And most of those inquiries come through my YouTube channel, Armenian Life with Mitch. So I'm kept busy that way.
Peter, how did you get involved with the forcibly displaced Artsakh population?
So, of course, this is a great tragedy for the Armenian people. And a few weeks ago, our friends Len Wicks and his wife Armine from RNE, they told us that there were about 100 or so families relocated into the village of RNE, and they needed some clothing and basic needs. And so we thought that what can we do to help? So we thought that we would do a YouTube video, and just I think the first one was to say what they needed and if anybody was willing to send their donation. To us, we would personally deliver any clothes which were bought brand new by my wife, Sonia, to the village itself. And that's exactly what we did. We were able to, I think, raise about $700 the first time, something like that. And since then, I'll talk about this a little later, we were able to raise just over 1,000. So altogether, we've raised about $1,800. And so we learned of the needs of the people, and if you like, I will talk about two things. I talk about the families that have been relocated in RNE, and then also at the Suronush summer camp in Vayatsor, between the towns of I think it's Yeghegas and Hermon, in the Yeghegas State Sanctuary, a very beautiful area. So if you like, I can talk about that.
Yeah, sure.
Okay, so first of all, as I said, we were able to raise around $700. And so with that money, we bought warm clothes, particularly for the children, jeans, tops, stockings, warm stockings and things like that, and brand new shoes and boots for the children, and also some new quilts and pillows, because we think if we were in the same position as our poor Artsakhi brothers and sisters, we would like to have some new things. There's nothing wrong with sending secondhand things, but I think as far as their dignity goes, I think it's important that we realize we should try to love each other as we love ourselves, as even the Bible commands us to do. So if we would love to have something new like that, so would they. I'll give you one example. There are about 150 to 200 in RNE village and surrounding villages. And some of those were relocated into vacant homes. So they'd been vacant for many, many years. And as you can imagine, the plumbing system is either not working or it's very poor. And so we learnt that some of their urgent needs are for a proper bathroom and toilet, for example. So we visited one family, we delivered some clothes, and the children were so excited, especially one girl who just wanted to go to school so badly, and she had no clothes, no proper clothes to go to school with. So when she tried on new jeans, she was just overjoyed, new jeans and a top. She was so, so happy. Now, this family has been located in one of these vacant homes, and there is no functioning bathroom and toilet. Can you imagine? They have a little shower head in a cold kind of detached bathroom from the house, but there's no bath, there's no proper shower, there's a cement floor, no toilet, not even an outhouse. The outhouse hasn't been functioning for years and years and years. So the next thing that they'll need, and about five other homes that we've identified, they'll need to have a renovated bathroom and toilet. That's essential, especially for families with lots of children. So we also went to other homes and delivered clothing in a similar way. And whatever we weren't able to give out personally, we gave to one man from the municipality who will in turn hand out to those families who've been allocated to other homes. So that's the R&E situation. It's fluctuating. It's very hard to say whether these families will stay there long term. The hope is that yes, they will. It'll be very good for them because in R&E there's already a big ex-Aitsaki population, I think something like 60%. So they feel right at home there, and the community has welcomed them with open arms, which is wonderful. And I would say that all of the other villages and the bigger cities also are opening their homes, and they're doing the best they can for these poor people. And you have to understand that most came only with the clothes they had on their back and whatever they could carry. It's just a tragedy. There's no other way to describe it. But right now, I believe that we should focus on helping our Aitsaki brothers and sisters and how we can help them integrate into a new life in Armenia. And this responsibility can't be borne by the government alone. That's just impossible. There's simply not enough money and resources to help over 100,000 extra people. So it falls on the shoulders of each and every Armenian and other compassionate folks from other countries to do what we can to help them.
Peter, are there displaced people from Artsakh placed in Yerevan as well?
Yes, there are. I have no idea of the numbers, but as you can imagine, there are a number of families from Artsakh who have relatives in Yerevan. And so they're able to stay with families, and that's a good thing. So I believe there have also been homes and even apartments that have been opened up for them. And I have no idea of the condition of them and how long they're able to stay, but hopefully for a longer period of time. I'll give you an example. One of my colleagues from work, her family, mother and brother, live in Artsakh. And she's now renting a home in, I think it's Bangladesh. And for those of you who don't know what Bangladesh is, it's a affectionate name for the, now I can't even think of the suburb. Anyway, the real name for it isn't Bangladesh, but it's a suburb outside of not far from the center, but it's a poorer suburb. Anyway, they're there and they're all together and they're doing the best they can. And so the answer to the question is yes, there are a lot. When we go to the bank, which is usually two or three times a week to collect donations, for example, there'll be 100 Artsakh people waiting to go in and do their banking and maybe collect their some money that they've received. So there are a lot here. But there are a lot also dispersed in the other villages throughout and rural centres, I might add. We mustn't forget that throughout all of Armenia.
No, I was going to say it's Malatya Sebastia district.
Malatya Sebastia, what? Why didn't I don't know, I had a mental blank. Yeah, that's where the big market is. And there are quite a few families there. I would like to say something very important about the Sirenish camp, though, which we were able to visit last week, if I may. So we also learnt through Len and Amine that a number of families, maybe up to 150 people, had been relocated to the Sirenish summer camp. It's between the towns of Yekheges and Hermon. It's in a beautiful area of Vyatsor, but it's a summer camp and it's not designed for winter accommodation. So we learnt that they had urgent needs, and these were some of the poorest of the poor Aitsaki people from villages and things like that who really had nothing pretty much to begin with anyway. So the Sunak NGO, which is kind of run by the Bishop of Vyatsur, or he has a large part to play in it. He's a very wonderful man, I might add. He's done us so much for the community in Vyatsur and Sunak for that matter. So this camp is now run by the Sunak NGO, and they've been doing a fantastic job. They really have to house these families. There are about 70 there at the moment, but it was around about 150. So why I say it's fluctuating is because some families get allocated an apartment, they move on, maybe they come to Yerevan, maybe they go somewhere else, maybe they've been offered a house. We don't know exactly. But right now there are about 70 people there at the moment, 30 of whom are kids, and they all have urgent need of warm clothing. So we were able to take warm clothing, again, warm boots and things like that to them last weekend. And we've got a video on that, actually, so people can, anyone who wants to watch can see that. And the good thing about this camp is that they're trying to make it as comfortable as possible for the family. So each family is allocated a room for the family, and they're all fed three meals a day. But they have an urgent need of a generator, a diesel generator, because they're electric only there at the camp. There's no gas in that region at all. So the generator is going to cost, for a good one, around 8 million dirhams, which is around 20,000 USD at the moment. And plus, for a longer-term solution, of course, the diesel generator is going to be expensive, but they need solar panels, and a lot. So the price on that and the exact amount are yet to be determined. This may go beyond the simple fundraising we're able to do. I mean, we wouldn't expect people to be sending us this type of money. We're more concerned about just raising awareness of what the needs are, and we can direct, for example, any larger donations, we can direct them to the Sunak NGO who was running the camp. So they're the two urgent needs, apart from, well, the daily running cost. If there were 200 people in that camp, we've been told that it's just $15,000 per month just in food. Can you imagine? $15,000 just in food to feed 200 people. So right now we're about half that, but you also have to allow money for like permanent staff who are there, for cooks. There is a kindergarten there, there are teachers and a nurse and things like that. It all kind of adds up. So if anybody wants to make a donation, please feel free to write to me through a YouTube channel. You can go to my main channel page and simply go to the About section, and that will take you to my business email, and I can have a chat. I'm very happy to have a chat with you about that.
Peter, are there international organizations visible on the ground helping the displaced?
Yes, there are a lot, actually. Now, I can't speak to all of them, of course, but I can speak to those which are involved in the camp, in Sirinush camp. When we were there, there were two other smaller NGOs helping. Besides Sunak NGO, there was these two smaller NGOs were from Germany. I think one was called Arminian Lilfe, I think it's called, L-I-L-F-E. I think Lilfe means life. So it's a very similar name to my channel, to be honest. And I tried looking that up, but it just wasn't, I don't know, maybe I got the spelling wrong. And there's also, I think it's called Noor Housing. And as much as I understand, they're both smaller NGOs, but they're doing great work. And they were giving a lot of attention to the children, sitting down, playing board games with them and things like that. So yes, in answer to your question, there are a lot of volunteer organisations that are helping throughout Armenia, and that's a really good thing to say. Besides that, you know, the Armenian people themselves just by themselves with a few other of their friends or work colleagues get together, and they'll raise some money and buy some necessary items and take to different villages, different communities, different camps. So that's been wonderful to see.
Peter, what are the stories you hear from the displaced from Artsakh?
Oh, well, I'll just give you another example. One of the families that are located in Arani, I spoke with, actually interviewed one of the mothers. And over here, you can see the sadness, the trauma on her face. They've been displaced twice. First in 2020, they were in one region that was taken over by Azerbaijan. And then secondly, now just in the last few weeks, they had to flee. They had a two-story home in one of the villages. I can't remember which one it was, but I think she mentions that in the video. And it's just traumatic because she said she wouldn't want her worst enemy to have gone through what they've gone through. You can multiply that by 100,000, and then that's what the story's like. It's just horrific. It's a genocide, really, because now we're hearing stories of, and now I don't know how true this is, but I quite well believe it, that even the churches are being desecrated. Maybe not so much desecrated as in all evidence of them being Armenian churches is being erased, and they're putting on, different language. I can't remember now who the Azeris believed that these churches belonged to in the beginning. Of course, that their story is completely different. But let's not get onto that. It's about what we can do to help these people now. And I think we mustn't forget that the psychological trauma will take years, maybe even a lifetime, to heal. And so we must not just think about clothes and, giving them a proper education, but how we can counsel them, how we can be there for them, just talking to them, listening to their stories, and seeing what we can do to help them through this terrible period in their life. It really is quite horrific. But having said that, this lady, I don't know what happened, but when we were doing the interview, you know, some of her kids were making a noise, especially one boy, and I said, "Don't worry, he's just a boy." And she smiled and laughed, and then we had some fun with the kids. So, you know, they're human like all of us. They can still laugh, they can smile, but underneath that is a terrible pain. They lost everything, Bahia. They lost absolutely everything. Just the clothes that they have on their back. Maybe they have a little bit of money they're able to bring with them, but some hardly any at all. And so it's terribly traumatic for them.
Peter, what is the general mood in Armenia with the latest developments, the loss of Artsakh and the refugees and the continuing threats against Armenia by Azerbaijan?
Well, it's difficult for me to answer, but I think everybody has a sense of sadness, as well as a sense of hope that we, as a nation, may really be able to come together. And despite this terrible, terrible tragedy, I think good can come from this. You know, some accuse me of being too optimistic, but that's just who I am. But we mustn't be complacent. Now is the time to be vigilant. And we, I think, need to protect our borders at all costs. And yeah, we can claim our sovereign territory, but who cares from the countries outside of Armenia? We hope that we have some good allies, but there is a fear that Azerbaijan will try something And, you know, there's already been an incursion, or what was that, in 2022, I think, in Jamuk, around that area. They just decided to come into our sovereign territory, and apparently they're still occupying quite a big area there. So we have to be very, very vigilant and not pretend that this is the end. They won't do anything again. I think, given the chance, they will. But I also think that they are coming under increased international pressure to not do something. So our hope and our prayer is that they won't, but we should be prepared. And I think the people of Armenia, we know this. I also think that it's not good at this stage to be overcritical of our government, whether you like them or hate them. They have a very big, big responsibility. And I think, given the situation, they're doing the best they can. Of course, they can do better. We all know that. We can do better. But my mantra is, let's not look at what others can do. Rather, let's look at what we can do to help. And if we all do something to help our country, I think we can achieve great things. So the people's mood, in summary, I think is one of sadness and is one of hope at the same time.
Peter, thank you for the interview and your time. We appreciate your work in Armenia. I hope we meet one day, not only on the phone, but personally as well.
It's a pleasure, Vahejan, and to all of your audience. I would just say, stay strong. Please, please keep our country in your prayers, and Artsakhi brothers and sisters, if you're able to help in whatever way, it doesn't matter that you send donations to me. This is not important. There are many, many other NGOs, and I know many of people are helping family members and things like that from Artsakh directly. So it's not about who the money goes to so much as we want it to filter into the people most in need, and that's our Artsakhi brothers and sisters. Keep them in your prayers. Do what you can to help, and it's been a pleasure to speak with you again, Vahejan, and I too hope we can meet in person one day. It would be wonderful. Thank you so much.